It's Celtics coverage on CLNSRadio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free. 347-215-7771.
Yes, that's right. That is where you can find us here on the telephone, 347-215-7771. I will tell you who those, a little bit more about our sponsor of those call lines a little bit later. My name is Matt Rury. Welcome on in to the CLNS Media Celtics post-game show. Tonight, the Celtics take on the Timberwolves. I almost said Wizards twice. I don't know why, but it was on the tip of my tongue, and I had to stall myself there for a second, so forgive me. But they're out in Minnesota. They win this game 117-109, kind of going away. The Wolves didn't really put up much of a fight towards the end of this one, even though it kind of looks like it might have been close, but it really wasn't. The Celtics had a big handle on this game. They had serious control of this thing throughout the game, aside from the first maybe 2 minutes. So they win this one going away, 117-109. And tonight here on CLNS Media, I am joined by Andrew Rubino. And finally, we get a good one to talk about here. And the Celtics come away with a much-needed win. But before we get into all the good things, Andrew, we would be remiss if we didn't point out the fact that yet another injury on a TNT national television game for the Celtics. And it looked pretty serious at first. We're glad that he walked off the court, but for anyone that hasn't seen it or is just tuning in now to sort of get the wrap up, Jaylen Brown went down really hard on a dunk, and he went down hard on his back, and it looked bad. It looked like he may have a concussion immediately. He did end up walking off and waving to the crowd, so that is a good thing. But, Andrew, that's where I'm going to lead off tonight, because even though the Celtics won and it was a great game and there's a lot to get to, that to me seems like the most important thing coming out of this game tonight.
Matt, it was in the fact that it felt like deja vu. Like you said, it wasn't just the fact, oh, wow, scary Celtics injury. If this was at home against a different team and it was a local game, it would obviously be extremely scary and the same type of feeling. But it felt like I was in the same sitting in the same spot, Matt, on the same couch, watching the same TV, the same announcer, and Marv Albert. And every Celtics guy had their hands on their head. Guys were heads in towels. It was so almost spooky to see. And I think that's why a lot of Celtics guys were probably freaked out, because it felt like the same type of moment where it's like, oh, my God, is he okay? Because I personally thought he had broke his neck because of the way he came down. He looked like Marv Albert said on the broadcast, looked like an NFL player that almost had a crazy hit and didn't know where he was. So I was freaked out. I didn't know, obviously, what happened. Was so glad to see him get up and walk off on his power. I thought that was tremendous and great. Made me feel very optimistic about what happened. But anyways, like you said, we would be wrong to not lead with what seemed to be or looked to be potentially devastating injury, and hopefully isn't going to be more than I don't want to put a time on it, because I'm not a football concussion doctor or a basketball concussion doctor. But, I mean, I want to say he could be back in 3 weeks based off the fact that he got up, and if it's just a concussion. But I thought there was some damage when he fell, man.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of speculation from Reggie Miller, first of all. Also speculation on Twitter. If you were looking at Twitter during the game, people were wondering what had actually happened to him immediately. And that's actually Kevin Harlan on the call tonight, not Marv Albert. They do sound very similar, though, so I got them mixed up for many years. I get those guys mixed up all the time. But either way, he was the one doing the Gordon Hayward game in Cleveland as well, where Hayward broke his leg. So there was something spooky, like you said. It was a weird case of deja vu tonight when Jaylen Brown went down hard on his back, and luckily not his head, but I think he still had some whiplash and some serious pain in his upper body, which could lead to a concussion. So again, you said it, no speculation on the timeline from us. We don't know anything about that. That's just not in the cards for us tonight. We are just gonna say that we hope he gets better soon, and that he comes back strong, and that he gets some rest. and really fights this thing off. Concussions are a weird thing. If that's the only speculation that we will do tonight, is that it seemed to be a concussion. And if that's the case, it you never know what's going to happen. We've seen Al Horford suffer some concussions, and one he was out 9 games for a couple of years ago or last year, and then this year he was out another handful of games for a concussion-like symptoms as well. So it's not something that the Celtics are unfamiliar with, unfortunately, but I feel confident in their training staff, and they've gotten Al Horford back onto the court successfully multiple times now, so I would like to believe that they would do the same with Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, you have everybody should have the confidence in any professional team. I mean, if you're going to be a doctor, a trainer, you're going to be the best in the world for any pro-American sports team. But I think the biggest bummer for me, Matt, is I'm a huge Jaylen Brown guy. I think he's an extremely important part of the future, especially considering how young him and the Tatum are as a combination. And really tough because Brown was playing quality minutes. I mean, he had already played 28 minutes when he left. It didn't look like he was coming out anytime soon. He's having a quality game. He shot 4 of 10 and had 5 rebounds, 14 points. So it was a bummer to see him go down, obviously, from just an injury standpoint, but hopefully the fact that he no crazy damage was done, he walked off to kind of analyze it in a more basketball way. I was bummed just the fact that Jaylen Brown couldn't finish the game. But forget about the injury part. Like, as an analyst, as a person who follows his team, I feel like you want to see Jaylen Brown progress as much as he can, and it felt like a game that he was doing that against some really good wings. I mean, Andrew Wiggins, obviously, is a very talented young wing. Jamal Crawford, I don't know if you can call him a wing, but he's such a great scorer, and Jaylen Brown was obviously going against him as well. So it was just kind of tough to see him not get to finish out that game in a game he really looked good in.
Yeah, and Jaylen, we know, is a young, promising player. They were talking about how his averages have jumped up significantly from his rookie season. He definitely took a step forward this year, regardless of how the season was going to end for him. So I'm hoping that he gets back on the court real soon and continues that progress, because he is a young, promising player. And the one thing that you think about is he going to be a little bit more hesitant? Are we going to see that high-flying stuff from him as often? And quite frankly, if we don't, that's fine. If he can feel more confident and feel a little bit more comfortable on the court after this by not doing that stuff so often, and he puts his efforts into something else and focuses on improving elsewhere, I think that the Celtics will be just as well off for it. So Jaylen Brown, come back with confidence. Come back playing however you feel like playing and how you can play. Don't let this thing get to you. You're going to come back strong. That's my opinion on that. I do need to remind everybody, of course, that this episode of the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show is brought to you by SeatGeek. And if you're looking for tickets to that next Celtics game, guess what? It's Sunday. It's against the Indiana Pacers. It's a home game, so you can definitely find some pretty good seats over on SeatGeek, and it's really easy. So go check it out. Head over to SeatGeek.com or download their app. The app is really great. It's easy. You can shop for tickets anywhere you are as long as you can get on the app. Just a few taps, you'll find your seats. I just use SeatGeek to actually buy Celtics tickets in New Orleans because I'm going to be there next week when the Celtics take on the Pelicans. And it was unbelievable how quickly I found the seats that I wanted. Just good stuff all around over at SeatGeek. So check it out. They save you money. They save you time. And compared to the other sites out there, it's amazing prices and excellent deals. So you have to go check it out. And if you do that and put in the promo code Garden Report in the SeatGeek app, you're going to get $20 off your first purchase. So guess what? You buy $25 worth of tickets. Those tickets cost $5. It's a great deal. Garden Report. That's the promo code. Go over to the SeatGeek app and put it in there today to get $20 off that first purchase. Okay, so we've given the proper attention to Jaylen Brown, I believe, to start this show. Spent a significant amount of time on it. If anybody wants to call in and go get back to that, that's perfectly fine. But I'm going to move on and start talking about this game. And the result of this game, Andrew, is that the Celtics have clinched a playoff berth. They've become the second team in the Eastern Conference to do so. And, I mean, not really an amazing accomplishment, seeing as how they were expected to be there as the one or two seed this season. But they are behind Toronto right now, and I briefly want to touch on those two teams before we really dig into this game, because Charles Barkley tonight flipped his script, and he says that now Toronto is going to come out of the East. And he still is a Celtics hater. He's still hating on the Celtics. He doesn't believe in the Celtics. I said the other night on my podcast, Careless Whispers, that if Toronto has the home court advantage, I believe they would take the series. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that quickly. Toronto's playing out of their minds right now, and the Celtics have their work cut out if they're going to take that one seed and get that home court advantage, assuming they meet in the NBA or in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that's a huge assumption, and LeBron said it best today in a press conference, that LeBron and the Cavs, they don't care what seed they are because they know that they have the confidence that they're still, even though there's four guys left from the Eastern Conference championship team last year, they're still the reigning Eastern Conference champions. And I've been on the record saying that the Cavs and LeBron, until somebody dethrones them, they're still a favorite in my opinion. So, I mean, talking about the Raptors, though, just in general, because I can't assume that it's going to be Toronto and Boston in the Eastern Conference. I can't take myself there yet. But if you were talking a potential series between these two teams, Matt, I personally think that the home court advantage would be a major thing, especially considering the fact that the Celtics did not look good at Toronto at all. I want to say it was 2 weeks before the All-Star break. I'll fact check myself, but that game that they played against Toronto, and they lost, I want to say they were down by almost 25 at one point. They lost by 20. It was 111-91. That's accurate. It was about 2 weeks before the All-Star break. But anyways, like I was saying, they had a huge problem going into Toronto. And, I mean, look, DeMar DeRozan, like people say nationally, is the most underrated superstar in this league. I mean, he's been carrying the Raptors all year. He's averaging over, I want to say, 24 points a game. And the biggest thing, too, is that he's a closer. I mean, the other night, Matt, you probably saw the viral video of him literally winning the game for the Raptors off of a poster dunk.
Yep.
So, DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, they just let him waltz right by. Running of the Bulls over there, yeah, like a matador.
It was insane, wasn't it? So, I mean, they're legit, like you said. But I think the biggest thing really is the depth on the Raptors is different this year, because it used to be the Lowry and DeRozan show. And if those guys didn't show up, which they didn't against a lot of those series the past couple of years against Kyrie and LeBron-led Cavs team, they didn't have a ton of depth. Now you look at how many different guys they have coming off the bench. I mean, it's very similar to a Celtics team, and they match up very well against a Celtics team. And we can get into the depth of the Celtics tonight. I thought that was a silver lining of the Jaylen Brown freak, call it an injury or potential concussion. But they definitely match up well with the Celtics team. So.
Yeah, and when I was saying that they were going to be the matchup in the Eastern Conference Finals, I was just basing that on the seeding. If the two of them were to win their series as the 1 and 2, they would definitely meet in the Eastern Conference Finals. I didn't mean to discount Cleveland at all. I was more focusing on Charles Barkley's take at the beginning of this game, saying that Toronto was his new pick to come out of the East, and it seems like Charles is picking a new team every day. Before you know it, he's going to say, yeah, you know what, I think Detroit has a shot. I think Milwaukee's going to be the one that does this. Regardless of whether either one of those teams looks like they're going to make the playoffs right now, I think Charles Barkley is just pulling things out of the air, and he's going with anyone but Boston in his mind. That's going to be Charles's take. Until they prove him wrong, he's going to say anyone but Boston. So we'll wait and see how that plays out, but I was just curious what you thought about that, because if Charles is assuming that Toronto is going to just waltz into the NBA Finals, I think a lot of other people probably feel that way too. And they have been playing well, so you have to give them credit. But don't discount Cleveland and LeBron, because he's not going to go down without a fight. And I think the Celtics are better than Charles has given them credit for pretty much all season. So that's that. Anyway, let's now dig into this game. It's been 20 minutes now almost, and I've led people on a path that is not conducive to a post-game show, but that's fine. We're going to go with it now. Overall, they played great in this game. They came out strong. Everybody was passing the ball. They all looked confident on offense. They were rebounding well. They were playing great defense. I don't know who stood out to you, but I'm going to give credit to Marcus Smart tonight, because even though he had one of these typical poor shooting games, he was all over the place on defense, making significant plays, diving for the loose balls, ripping the ball out of bigger guys' hands. He looked like a player that really drives the defense and is important to the Celtics. So I just wanted to give Marcus Smart a shout out, first of all, to talk about as far as this the actual gameplay went tonight.
Yeah, I mean, look, and the thing, I think the biggest stat that comes to, or kind of stands out, I should say, about Smart's stat line tonight is a plus 15. The only guy on the team better tonight was Marcus Morris, and that kind of makes sense because when Morris was in there, he was essentially hitting buckets, making big shots, and he shot nearly 50% from the field, 7 of 15. But Smart, like you said, you look at his stat line, he was 2 for 7 from the field, didn't hit a 3 out of the 4 he took, and he missed four free throws, and he had 6 assists, which is great, but you'd be like, okay, like that's probably nothing crazy. He makes those plays, like you said, defensively. He had such a great putback dunk that's a momentum and a momentum shifter and a spark for the Celtics team. So a plus 15 on a bad shooting night and still making plays, that's Marcus Smart in a nutshell. But he's that guy that, like Brad Stevens says, he could hit no shots and he's still going to affect the game. So clearly, Marcus Smart, like you said, deserves to get a shout out for this game. I think, in my opinion, Terry Rozier definitely deserves a mention tonight, a very efficient performance, especially at the end of that game. Matt, the way that Terry came in for Jaylen Brown, it kind of played in Jaylen Brown's role, hit a huge three, and then he set up a great pass to Tice for a couple free throws, and then he hit another huge three later on in the fourth, I want to say, with about 3 minutes left. So it was great to see Terry Rozier come in. I mean, he only played 24 minutes, half the game, and a lot of that was in the fourth. So I was impressed with the way Rozier kind of always comes in, and it's like, oh, you guys are going to finally give me a chance tonight? Let me show you what I can do. So that's kind of, I feel like, Terry's game, because look at what he does when he gets starts. He gets triple-doubles. He gets 30-point games. That's kind of the player Terry Rozier is, and I was really impressed by how he came in and did that tonight, because you know what? Matt, there's going to be games, hopefully, in a long and hopefully deep playoff run for the Celtics where Terry Rozier is going to need to come in and there's going to have nothing going offensively. Kyrie might be off. Horford might be stagnant. Whatever the case may be, because the playoffs are long and grueling just as much as the regular season, Terry Rozier is one of those guys. And Marcus Smart, too, but Terry Rozier offensively definitely can be a spark. And I think he showed that tonight, especially in the fourth quarter, facilitating the offense both with his scoring and a couple of nice passes.
Yeah, Terry Rozier, I might even go as far to say, I will go as far to say that look, from the outside looking in, Terry Rozier appears to be the most confident player on the Celtics. And I know that's a strange comment to make because, God, how many confident players are there? Pretty much the whole starting lineup is confident. Al Horford, Jason Tatum, right on down the list, these guys are confident. They believe in themselves, right? But Terry Rozier seems to elevate his game every time he steps on the floor. And I think that a quote from him a few months ago saying that he's ready to be a starter in this league and he's just had a rough go of it being behind Isaiah Thomas and Kyrie Irving now, that I think that quote is true. And I think that there will be a point in the next couple of years where the Celtics are going to have to make a serious decision. Is Terry Rozier your sixth man and your backup point guard, and you're going to pay him more money than a backup point guard is worth, or are you going to let him walk away and become the starter in this league that he deserves to be? So that's going to be an interesting development going forward. I'm sure that Marcus Smart plays into that a little bit and what happens with him in the offseason as a restricted free agent, but that's a little bit further down the line, so won't get into that now. But Rozier did have a great game tonight, and he hit a couple of big shots, a couple of big threes down the stretch to answer a big three by Minnesota. And Bielka, I got the name right, how about that, killed them tonight. If it wasn't for the Celtics and basically nobody else on Minnesota showing up, they would have lost to this Bielka, Jimmy Butler's replacement. Nemanja Bielka killed the Celtics tonight. Killed them. 30-12, 6-9 from three. So if you're looking at the Minnesota side of things, the Celtics are lucky they got away with one here. But I think overall, the rest of the Timberwolves had a tough time. So either way, they find a way to win this game 117-109. Like I said earlier, they were winning pretty much the whole game. And they took this one going away. So I'm going to head over to the call lines now. Remind everybody of that phone number, 347.
Matt, before you go to the call,
yeah.
Matt, just before you go to the call lines, I just want to say, just like I kind of I butchered who the announcer is, it's Bielitsa. It's such a weird pronunciation. I don't know why it's that way, but that is the proper pronunciation for
Bielitsa.
He did have 30 and 12. No, you're fine. You know, it's a nightmare last name, so no worries, man.
And I practiced that before the show, and I said it wrong twice. So that just goes to show what happens around here. We got each other's
honestly,
back, Andrew.
We clearly do, and I'm just glad he's not on the Celtics, man.
If he was on the Celtics, I'd say it perfectly every time. Bielitsa. Nemanja Bielitsa.
It's like pipe, right?
That's right. Exactly. Anyway, that call line number is 347-215-7771. It is brought to you by RX Bar. And if you don't know what RX Bar is yet, you should probably go check it out because it's a whole food protein bar and it's delicious. It has 100% whole ingredients and they're very transparent with what those ingredients are. So if you're worried about chemicals and dyes and all this stuff that they put into protein bars nowadays, RX Bar is the real deal. Real cacao, real coconut, whatever you want. Depends on the flavor, of course. But they don't put in the fillers and the additives or the chemicals, like I just said. No added sugar, nothing like that. Back 5 years ago now, they created a great bar, and you should go check it out because it's like eating 3 egg whites, 2 dates, and 6 almonds in the bar. It doesn't taste like that separately because that would be weird, but it tastes delicious. Sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit flavors is an RX bar for you. There are 11 different flavors. I like the apple cinnamon. Go check that out. You can have it for breakfast on the go or a snack at the office. And if you're traveling, it's great too because it's small enough to throw it in your bag on the plane. And if you want, go put in promo code, which should be in front of my face, but it's not. Well, Andrew, do you know what the promo code is? Because I thought it was CLNS Radio. I could be wrong. It's not on this copy. You can get 25% off your first order. So maybe go check out a previous post-game show where somebody got it right and figure that out. CLNS Media maybe is the code. This is the best live read that I've ever done. And it brings us to the call lines, 347-215-7771. I've never been so embarrassed to bring this gentleman on the air with us. Andrew, I have to tell you that I told Calvin Chamberlain the other night, my co-host on Careless Whispers, that he was my co-host tonight on the post-game show. I was reading, again, the wrong line item. I don't know why I can't figure this out. He and I are on the show next week, so here he is, chomping at the bit to come and talk to us about this game tonight because he watched every second, and he was ready to come on the show, and now I've made him wait. Calvin.
Yeah,
hello,
here's
sir.
The thing is that I'm really dumb, and I never know when I'm actually hosting post-game shows. So I sort of just took Rory's word for it that I was hosting the game. Hosting with him tonight, watched the entire game. I've got some thoughts, especially on the Timberwolves. What a dumb team that is. So dumb.
Poorly coached or like they just don't have smart players? What are you getting at?
Exactly. If you want to blame it on coaching, that's fine. Even though I like Thibodeau, I tend to put it on the players. But really, I'm just talking about not taking advantage of their advantages. The difference between the Celtics and the Timberwolves in terms of basketball intelligence in this game was so evident. But I spent 20 minutes trying to figure out how to pronounce that guy's name. Well, what is it again?
They
spent forever on the broadcast trying to figure it out, and all for naught because apparently I'm not hosting this game after all with you guys, but that's fine. I just watched the game, and first of all, for you to say that Rozier is the most confident player on the Celtics, that's a crazy thought to me. If you look at Kyrie Irving's shot selection, like that, the shots that he takes, it speaks to his confidence. Even Marcus Smart's shot selection, even though they don't go in as much. I mean, those two guys are on another level when it comes to confidence on this team. But Mosier is definitely a guy who does have confidence, but I don't think it's at Marcus Smart's level or Kyrie's. But, yeah, speaking of Kyrie, I mean, look, the Timberwolves went on their little run in the fourth quarter. I thought the Celtics, like, despite the fact that they were smaller for the majority of the game, you know, the Timberwolves played that huge lineup. I'm not going to try to say his name again, but that guy's tall, and Taj Gibson and Towns as their front line, so they essentially don't have a small forward. And, you know, Wiggins plays shooting guard technically, but he's 6'8". And so, like, they have a huge lineup. The Celtics have a smaller lineup, especially after Brown got hurt. And the way that they were able to sort of beast out defensively in that situation and even force the Timberwolves into situations where Wiggins would, you know, post up a smaller guy, but he wouldn't be able to get all the way to the basket. He'd have to settle for a bad turnaround jumper or, like, even Towns time and again settling for you know, bad mid-range jump shots when they had the advantage. And there were so many times where, like, Wiggins would post up Kyrie, and then, like, it would take so long to get him the ball that the Celtics would manage to switch out Kyrie and Marcus Smart. That happened three times in the game, and then Wiggins couldn't do anything trying to post up Marcus Smart except settle for a bad fadeaway jumper. And I guess that's emblematic of what I'm talking about. And then I know that the stat line says that Jamal Crawford went 7 of 16, but the shots that he was taking in that game were and I know it's Jamal Crawford's thing too, but I don't know. I would have been furious if I was a Timberwolves fan at his performance. Yeah, just smart basketball all the way around. The way the Celtics move the ball, I guess, is what I'm talking about, as opposed to the Timberwolves. I'm sorry for monopolizing. Go ahead, Chip.
No, that's all right. Before I let Andrew talk to you, because he hasn't said really a word besides Bielitsa to you, I just wanted to ask you if you knew or cared what the promo code is for the RX bar, because we figured it out, and I think that you'd find it interesting.
I mean, I do care, but do you think there's a chance that I know? There's not a chance that I know.
Okay, you don't actually know what it is. I'm going to tell you. No, it's CLNS.
Nice.
It's CLNS. The copy is wrong.
All right, well.
We thought it was unique underscore code. Because that's what it says on the damn copy.
Huh. You can take that up with Nick tomorrow.
It's CLNS. So there you go. RXBar.com/CLNS if you are looking for that 25% off. I know you are. Anyway, Andrew, please talk to my man, Calvin.
Calvin, I think something that is interesting you said is you would be disappointed in the Timberwolves' performance if you're a T-Wolves fan. I have to agree, especially the fact that Towns, he needs to be kind of that alpha dog now that Butler's out, and I think Butler's going to be out, another 3 to 4 weeks? But I think the biggest thing is, at the end, I mean, in the fourth quarter, Stevens had Semi Ojeleye at one point on Towns, and, like, Towns, he got fouled, but it was just one of those things that Towns, like, everybody talks about him as this, like, transcendent kid who's so athletic and can hit threes, and oh my god, he's taking over this league. And, like, obviously I've seen other games where Towns looks like that, but, like, this is a nationally televised game against a really good team, and he should be one of those guys that steps up. I mean, he's a young guy who's a stud in this league, and he should show it in a game against a really good Celtics team. And so I think that I have to agree with you with that, Calvin. Another thing is, who out of the bench guys do you think, I mean, because I know you've been listening, me and Matt have been talking about it. We both said that Smart and Rozier really looked great. I mean, did Morris impress you with his 17, or are you just kind of used to, at this point, Marcus Morris, who's just kind of unconscious from beyond the arc?
No, he did impress me in this game. I haven't been the biggest overall fan of Morris this season. I thought he had a great game in that respect. Offensively, he was hitting shots that seemed to be contested pretty well as well, but he also was, you know, in control. And just to speak on your point about Towns, I mean, look, people a year or two ago were trying to legitimately compare him to Anthony Davis and talk about who was better, and I thought it was like an insane notion at the time, and I think we do this with a young guy always in general anyway. And, it, like, And then, like, later on as they get older, they never sort of take that next step. Then everyone just, like, goes the other way, like people seem to be doing with Wiggins now. We're just talking about on our podcast the other day, like, everyone's just over Wiggins, and all of a sudden he's the next Rudy Gay, which, granted, he was terrible in this game. But to my point about Towns, like, the difference between Towns and an actual superstar like Kyrie Irving is you saw, like, Kyrie Irving came back in the game in that fourth quarter, and the gravity that he created by being in that game and hitting a couple of difficult shots, they were paying so much attention to him that Horford got, like, Horford went off in that fourth quarter essentially because of Kyrie. And not just because of that pass he hit, which was an awesome pass, but it's because the defenders were out of position to try to be in secondary position to contain Kyrie. I look at what's happening on the other end. Whether or not Towns was scoring in that fourth quarter, the Celtics were single covering him. They didn't seem to be worried about him. And that's, I guess, what my concern would be as a Timberwolves fan in that game. Like, he wasn't drawing the attention to get, Bellehiko those wide open threes. Like, Bellehiko was creating those off the bounce. Like, they didn't do a good enough job forcing the Celtics to sort of double team or to have a secondary guy there. And you could say the same thing about Wiggins, even though he doesn't get the same star love. Kyrie Irving, like, did that for the Celtics at the end of the game, and that's why they were able to maintain that lead and push it back up to double digits. Like, I can't speak right now, near the end of the game.
Yeah, you know what, Calvin, I think that's a great point, too, about Kyrie kind of bringing out the kind of the best in Horford, especially in that fourth quarter, because Kyrie was so confident, talking about confidence kind of as a narrative on this post-game show so far. I feel like Kyrie, at the very end of that game, the Celtics were up like 8. Oh, they're up 10. Oh, what the heck? T-Wolves caught it to 6 after that Taj Gibson 8-1. It was like, okay, like, someone needs to step up. And Kyrie, as usual, was like, okay, hello, like, I'm the best player on this court. Give me the ball. I'm going to hit a couple of jumpers in a row. I'm going to get Horford going with this pass. And it's just so amazing to me how much better Horford plays with Kyrie than he does with Isaiah. And I mean, I'm not going to turn this into a Kyrie and Isaiah debate because it doesn't need to happen. It's clearly Kyrie's the better player, but it's just so impressive how Kyrie can just kind of be like, okay, I kind of have taken it off this game. I'm kind of tired. My knee's still a little bit bothering me. I'm assuming internally he's kind of thinking that. And then he just flips the switch. Unbelievable jumpers. Great pass to Horford, like you said. And it is amazing to see Horford playing better, especially after that really horrible, quite frankly, performance against the Rockets. This is a great game for Horford to kind of close out with Kyrie and hopefully foreshadow what the Celtics can do in closing time in the come playoff time.
Well, let me ask you, I was going to ask you about Horford, because did you feel that Horford actually broke out of his slump? Because he sort of scored all 9 of those points in the last 2 minutes of the game. If he doesn't have that situation, you know, he scores 11 points in the game, didn't really have that many rebounds, was kind of, you could argue that he was kind of the same non-factor he's been recently. So I sort of feel like that last little bit fudged the narrative somewhat of what he was for the majority of that game. Or do you just come out of it feeling good overall about his game because the box score said that he had a good game?
No, take away the points. I think the fact that the Celtics were back to being a cog and he was in the middle of it and he was playing well and he was also facilitating, and they were playing good defense. I mean, look, like you already said, and you stated, and I don't know if there's me or you who stated Towns' points, but, I mean, Towns is supposedly one of these top 3 bigs in the league, and he held him to 15 points. So, I mean, Horford was doing a great job defensively, and then take away the 9 points in that last couple minutes. Say an 11, 8, and 6 stat line and playing great defense on Karl-Anthony Towns and your team wins. I mean, this is what the Celtics signed up for. I there's a lot of callers, Isaiah in Jersey, who I've talked to before on this show. He always wants more from Horford. If the price tag wasn't so high on Horford, people wouldn't complain, for lack of a better word, about Horford so much. I just feel like that people want Horford to have the stat line of like an Andre Drummond or an Embiid, and that's not who Horford is. Horford's playing within what Brad Stevens wants, and I love how at the end Horford finally showed, okay, like, I when the point guard gets going like this, I'm going to do me, and he scores those 9 points. So,
yeah,
I'm
going to
jump in
Horford
on this Horford thing here, because I think that people give him a bad rap. I mean, the hot take around here is to call him average Al and expect more from him because he's a $30 million man and he's a max player and blah blah blah. And they look at the numbers and they say, oh, Al Horford has bad numbers. And then On the other extreme, people are saying, oh, if you don't know that Al Horford is a good player, then you don't know basketball. And I don't think that's true either, because I think that there's an argument to be made about stats and putting up numbers. But the people that are complaining about his numbers are also ignoring the metrics that show that he's one of the best defensive players in the league, and that he is certainly one of the more important defensive players as far as the Celtics are concerned. And I'm not saying he's the best defensive player on the Celtics. I think there are a couple of guys that you could argue are better than him. But this is not the greatest analogy, because KG was the best player defensive player on the Celtics and the most important defensive player. But much like KG was talking and making sure guys are in the right place and just shouting things out, I think that Al Horford has become the Celtics' floor general on defense. And that is almost as important as being the best defensive player, in my opinion. So he's in the run. He's in the mix for defensive player of the year. And I think that's important. So if you're going to take away from him for poor shooting nights and disappearing, as so many talking heads around here seem to say, I think you have to give him credit for the times where he shows up and really anchors that defense, and the Celtics win because of it. So it's something that's overlooked,
Al Horford. Matt, just to hop in quick before Calvin, you can obviously make your point too. I can't stand, literally it infuriates me, whether I cover the Celtics or not, the fact that people say that Horford can't show up at the end of games. I mean, or just in general, Horford doesn't show up. Like, did people not watch that game at home when the Celtics came back against 26 in the down 26? Who hit the shot at the end? Al Horford. Who hit the shot against the Blazers? Al Horford. Like, Al Horford has played very well in crunch time this year, and they have one game when they're on a four-game winning streak against the Rockets, and it's a big game. It's a nationally televised game. It's the one time all of these people that barely cover the Celtics watch a game, and like, oh my God, Al Horford stinks. We're paying him so much money. He does bad down the stretch. Watch the whole season. Watch his production. Like, I can't stand them. People say, oh, he's just good at defense, and he barely shows up on offense. Are you kidding me? The guy had 6 assists and 8 boards tonight, and you mixed in 20 points. Okay, say the points are a little bit inflated. That's still an unbelievable stat line, considering he shut down the other team's best offensive player, and he's been so consistent in the fourth quarter this year. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm getting a little bit heated about it, but that's just my take. I can't stand the average Al talk. And look, I'm not saying he is a top 20 player in the league. That's not what I'm saying. But does he fill a very unique niche on a team where Brad Stevens is coaching? Yes, he does. So, Calvin.
All right, Calvin, feel free to stick around with us here as long as you'd like. I'm going to move on to another caller. Actually, Andrew, you mentioned Isaiah in New Jersey, and he's on the line right now. And we'll see if he has anything to say about Al Horford. So that's the discussion point right now. And like I said, Calvin, I'm just going to leave you here until you decide to leave, buddy. So, Isaiah, welcome to the show.
What's going on, fellas? Hey, my man Calvin, man. What's going on with you?
What's up, Isaiah? Yeah, I'm here tonight because it's really tricked me, so I'm on
Well, it's like that sometimes, man. But nonetheless, I'm glad to have you, man. Glad to speak to you again. Last time we talked, we were talking about IT, and he's no longer here. So we got a whole bunch of new storylines to talk about, like Al. It's funny that you brought that up, because that's exactly what I was calling about. What's going on, Andrew?
Yo, what up, Isaiah? I love you, Isaiah. You know what I love? That's the first time I've ever used a caller in a soliloquy or in a rebuttal, and I was so congratulations. You're the first caller I've ever used as a talking point. But I want to hear what you have to say about my man Al.
Well, first of all, I want to clarify everything I'm about to say by saying that I understand what everyone's saying of what Al does for the team and how he fits into the team. That being said, why is it that everyone thinks that we can't talk about or criticize Al? What is it about Al that makes everyone rush to his defense and act as if he can't be criticized? I mean, Kyrie gets criticized. Brad gets criticized when he doesn't make the right move. Every other player on this team gets criticized for what they don't do and how they can get better for what the team needs are, except for Al. For some reason, we feel the need to rush to a guy who can pretty much defend himself with his own play on the court. And it's not and the thing that I hate the most is that if you're not on the Al bandwagon, meaning you're not super defending him, then you don't know basketball and you're not watching what he does. There's a happy medium. I watch every Celtic game. I watch every Celtic game, and I see what Al does, and I praise him for what he does. But I also listen to every post game and hear everyone criticize everyone, from Terry Rozier at certain points to Marcus Smart almost all the time to Marcus Morris, to everyone else, and criticize and talk about how we need more points and more scoring. And my problem with Al is, if we're going to criticize the guys making $2, $4, $6, $8 million for upping their scoring, why aren't we asking the guy that's making $27 million to score more? That's what I'm saying. You can't criticize a third-year player, Marcus Smart, and say he's not the scorer we need, let's get him out of here. But you're paying out $27 million, literally, in an inflated economy. And I understand that the reason why we got Al was because we overpaid to get him. But everyone that summer was overpaid, and every other player in that overpaid summer has been criticized and say, hey, they got overpaid. Why is it that we can't say, okay, Al's not a $27 million man. He's a $20 million man, but he gets paid $27 against the cap. And because of that, why can't I ask Al to do more like every other player on this team has done since Gordon Hayward's been down? What is
you
the
know
problem
what, Isaiah,
with me or anyone I, not I, asking that?
I think that you're taking a nice level-headed approach to this, and I think you're absolutely right. There has to be a happy medium. Like we were saying earlier, you can't really say that he disappears. I wouldn't go that far. I don't think he just disappears.
Well,
he doesn't put up dud games. I'm not saying that you're saying that. I'm saying that's one extreme. But at the same time, you also can't say that he's perfect and that he does everything correctly. I feel like you're doing it right. You're looking at it from the right perspective. You're going at it from a level head. But I think Calvin can speak to the salary because this kid is like a cap machine. I don't understand it.
Well, I wasn't even going to go to the salary, to be honest with you. I've always been somewhat of a mild critic of Al Horford, but for me, it's not necessarily about how much money he makes, although that's a fair criticism as well. Although if any criticism is applied there, maybe it's a criticism you want to apply to Danny Ainge. He accepted a contract and will give it to him. So anybody would do the same. My criticism of him is more based on talent versus results. Like, I think the reason that it's fair, more than any other reason, to be critical of Al Horford, and I don't think it's really fair to criticize his defense, which I really haven't heard anyone actually do, but it's totally fair, unless you want to call rebounding defense, because it's totally fair to say, hey, Celtics get you out-rebounded sometimes, even though, yes, there are times when Al Horford is out of position. There's other times when he's not necessarily the best at boxing out, right? He's not necessarily somebody who goes hard after offensive boards when he's kind of in position to do so. So I think that's a reasonable complaint about him as your center/power forward. You might want a guy who hustles after it in that respect a little more. I think that you watch Al Horford in the way he can handle the basketball for a man his size, and the way he can take, you know, players of various different sizes either off the dribble or easily shooting over him with a jumper, you know, that stretches out to three and is putting money from mid-range. And you say, Al Horford, why aren't you taking shots that go down easily for you all the time, especially in games in which the Celtics struggle? I don't think any of those are unreasonable complaints about Al Horford because he's talented. Nobody looks at Draymond Green and says, hey, how come Draymond Green isn't scoring more? He's making so much money a year. Because you can tell Draymond Green is out there doing as much as he can every night, and he's not their most talented offensive basketball player, when you can argue that outside of Kyrie, when I look at, like, just in terms of offensive skill, Al Horford probably is the second most talented player out there. So why isn't he scoring more? I don't think that's an unreasonable question to have as a Celtics fan.
It's funny that you say that about Draymond Green, because somebody did a comparison of the two players and said that Al Horford was having a better year. I'm going to try and find that while Andrew jumps in here.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing, and Calvin, it makes sense that Horford does have the tools to be the second best guy, but I want to say one thing, Isaiah, how you were kind of like, I don't get why people don't critique Al more, and I get that, that's fair, but this is why I think so, because Al Horford is the lunch pail guy. Al Horford comes to work every day, he's quiet, he's not flashy, he's like a poor man's Tim Duncan, the way he plays, the way he goes about his business. There's nothing flashy or crazy about him, he's not Embiid, He's not out there on social media. He's not like some like guy connecting with fans. He just kind of go like they call him the dad of the team. So you know why it's easy not to go at him, Isaiah? I think because he isn't. He just kind of is consistently what the Celtics need. Like he's consistently solid. Like you're gonna see people start to complain about like Blake Griffin's play since he's gone to Detroit. Not great. He's on a huge contract. I think you're gonna see guys around the league with some of those huge contracts that they've signed during those kind of Horford, not just Horford summer, but those inflation summers. You're gonna see people start to complain about those types of guys, especially the flashy ones, those Blake Griffin like kind of superstar personalities that you see on commercials. Al Horford, he just comes every day. He does his work. He's a great overall player. And you know what? People try, besides the Boston area, people nationally don't hop on him that much. And maybe they will in the next couple of years as he gets older and his salary goes up even more. But right now, I think it's such a, the Celtics are such this house money team with the Gordon Hayward injury, and Horford's a huge piece of that. I think that's why on a day-to-day basis, Celtics media might and Boston media might go after Horford a little bit more, but I think that's why nationally, Isaiah, you don't hear as many people complaining because Horford is just kind of that lunch pail guy.
But I hear what you guys are saying, but for my money, I criticize Al because it goes back to what Calvin says. I criticize Al because we need more scoring. We need the offense to move more. And at times we become a jump shot heavy team, and Al has the skills to get down on the block and level out the team. I complained about the same thing last year when I thought that we were jump shot heavy. Different cast of characters now, but it's sometimes we get a little too jump shot heavy, and when those jumpers aren't falling, well, there's nothing to balance out the offense. When you can throw it down, settle down the offense, and even run the offense through the post. I get a little tired of Al running the offense through the high post, and I think everybody else does too, but no one wants to criticize it because everyone says we need more offense. But where's the offense going to come from? Al has the skill set to get down there and take a couple more shots. Just a couple more shots in the post, just to keep things level-headed, just to work from the inside out sometimes, and I think he doesn't take it. I think he – look at his box scores in some of these games. He's not even getting up enough shots. He just defers too much, and I would like to see Al be a little bit more selfish, but I think that's what everybody would like to see. If Al took a couple more shots, he wouldn't have the pressure that he has on him. But because he defers, he has the willing skill set and doesn't take advantage of it. I think it's unfair for us to harp on some of the younger players and salary cap wise, some of our players that don't make a lot of money, to be honest. They're on first year contracts. This guy is on his second or third contract. Simply more experience, and I think that when the time needs be, he shrugs off the opportunity. If you look at Al's
I don't know what this comparison was earlier with Draymond Green and Al Horford that I mentioned. To me, looking at the numbers, Green's having a better year. Al's scoring more points than him, but far fewer assists. Green has turned it over quite a bit. The thing that stands out to me, though, Isaiah, which is what I would counter you with as far as offensively is concerned, yeah, maybe he's not aggressive enough on the block, and I totally agree with you. Ultimately, I want the Celtics to have somebody, and it's not Greg Monroe, who has the ability to just take over and do whatever they want in the post. And Al does that sometimes, but he tends to fade away and go for that jump shot that you mentioned. And if he would go to the basket a little bit more, I think that the team would be better off for it. But at the same time, the whole mantra of this team is to catch and shoot when you're open and to just pick and pop or pick and roll. And I think Al Horford falls into that trap a little bit, but he shoots the ball extremely well. He's shooting almost 50% from the field right now.
And
he's shooting 43% from the three-point line. So that, to me, I mean, even though he's not averaging more than 13 points a game here, that kind of makes up for a little bit of the fact that he's not very aggressive down in the paint. And it's just the scheme doesn't really call for that too often. So
I'd like to see it more.
I want the Celtics to have somebody that can do that, and Al is certainly capable of doing so. I don't want to make excuses for him. It's just that's sort of the way that things have gone.
The only reason why I'm going to disagree with you is because this is regular season basketball. Everybody looks good against the Bulls. I'm talking about in the playoffs when it really counts, when the game slows down and those jump shots aren't falling, and you need to just get a basket. That's when I think Al shrugs off, and that's where I think that Al should shine, because he has the capability to at least draw a double team. Right now, if you look at Al, he doesn't draw. He's a $27 million guy that doesn't draw any double teams, even when he does get in the post. And right now, he's missing those shots. It only seems like he's making those shots if he's standing around at the three-point line, pump faking and going to the basket, or completely wide open. When Al is covered, he's not scoring. So that's part of the issue that I have, is that forget about regular season and those stats. All of that goes out the window in the playoffs. When the court shrinks and you really have to count on those possessions and those jump shots aren't falling, the Celtics lose every year. And this year, in order to, we have a real chance to really compete against those Western teams, but in order to do so, we might have to play a little different, and that means Al has to take his game to another level. I think we have the pieces on this team to really compete for a title, but unless Al takes that next step and starts to do some of the dirty work, get down on the block, and it doesn't even have to be Al, because to be honest, I'm going to back off what I just said, because I liked when Brad had Monroe out there with Al, and it allowed Al to stay out on the perimeter, and it allowed Greg Monroe, who's a really good passer, to work inside out. So I would love to see Brad experiment with that more, but if Brad doesn't, then that load falls on Al. And I'm really curious to see what he's going to do in the playoffs, because that's what's going to make or break that average Al nickname that he has.
I'd say I'm going to have to disagree with you on that point. I don't like what Monroe does to his defense, and maybe he can use him for stretches in the playoffs, but I don't see how Monroe becomes like a regular contributor come playoff time. But to add on to your other point, I think we can all see that, like, that you know, much like Al, Tatum and Brown are guys who are like, they're not, you can tell that they're better than the people they're going up against a lot of the time, but they're not quite aggressive enough yet. They still somewhat have the passiveness, especially Tatum, right? To where you know that they can destroy their guy, but they don't always have the self-confidence. And I wonder about that in the playoffs as well. So there might be even more pressure on Horford to be the guy who might have to take over a little more than he wants, you know, is naturally inclined to do, because I don't know if those guys are sort of ready to take on those roles completely quite yet.
They're not. Brad isn't even showing the confidence in them, because depending on how they're playing in the game, especially defensively, Brad's pulling these guys at the end of the game if he feels that they're not into the game, if they're not playing the defense that he wants them to play at certain times. So that even goes more to your point. They might not even be on the court in crunch time and playoff situations. It depends on how they're playing in that game. They're young guys, and they don't have the consistency, so you can't expect them to have that every night. That's where, once again, somebody like Al has to shoulder that load. And to be honest, I wouldn't feel comfortable, you know, running any of those guys down in the post in the playoffs. I would much rather stick to guys like Monroe, because the team that we're going to have to beat is Cleveland to get out of the Eastern Conference. And Cleveland is going to play Love and Tristan Thompson. They've done it before. LeBron plays the three, and they haven't necessarily been getting the wing performance that they wanted to get from the trade as of late anyway. So if that's the case, they're going to go with what works, which is Love and Tristan Thompson. And I think Greg Monroe can have a really big impact on that series, if just for the simple fact of slowing down Tristan Thompson and getting some rebounds. You're going to give up a little something on the defensive end, but what I'm going to get on the offensive end and what I'm going to get rebounding is going to justify Greg Monroe being on the court, to me, when it comes down to that Cleveland series. Those other series he might not play as much, but in that Cleveland series, if and when we go up against him, and also against Toronto, Don't think that they don't have a big front line that you have to go up against with Ibaka and the center slips my mind. But don't think we're not going to need Greg
Monroe.
Yeah, don't think we're not going to need Greg Monroe. That's why I think Brad put that lineup out there and it worked the other night. Monroe doesn't have the consistency with the offense yet, but I hope he does.
I think the defense is the big question, and Calvin mentioned that earlier, but we know that Greg Monroe would give Al Horford the chance to play the four where he is more comfortable.
Guys, we're right up against it.
This has been such a great discussion, but this show is running out of time right now. So, Isaiah, I thank you for calling in, sir. Much appreciated. I wish we could extend this a little bit longer so that we could get you to continue the conversation, but give us a call next game, which is Sunday. And it's going to be Mike and Marv. I don't know who those guys are, but they're going to jump in for us. So we'll talk to you next time. Andrew, why don't you give me a little closing thoughts here so we can give you a little bit more airtime as we end this show.
Look, just something real quick. I think that everybody is so immune to how great Kyrie's been playing. Tonight, Matt, in 30 minutes, the kid had 20 – because don't forget, he's only 25 years old, even though he's been to three straight finals. 23 points, 7 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals, and a block on 9 of 15 shooting. That is called efficiency in a game where he took over at the end. Kyrie Irving is proving to everybody that he can be absolutely the 1AAA number one option on any title-contending team, and Kyrie showed that tonight. So that's my final take of this game because we didn't really get to it because we had so much other great content to talk about. So.
Yeah, that was some great conversation tonight. Calvin, thanks for sticking around because this was a fun show for sure.
Yeah, thanks for keeping me on. It was fun. I'll talk to you on Tuesday, right?
Yeah, I would imagine we're going to do that. Careless Whispers, Tuesday, 9 p.m. Check it out. CLNS Media post-game show, Sunday. That game starts at 7:30. Didn't realize that was that late on a Sunday. Anyway, Mike and Marv have you at 10 o'clock here on CLNS Media for the next Celtics post-game show. That's going to do it for us. For Andrew Rubino and my man Calvin Chamberlain. Isaiah gave us a call as well. Thank you all for making this show a good one. I am Matt Rury. Tune in on Sunday, everybody. Celtics win 117-109. They clinch the playoffs. Bye-bye.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on clnsradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.